This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, June 26, 2013. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, poems for gay and lesbian weddings. A few weeks ago, we did a program about the difficulties of choosing a poem to be read at wedding ceremonies. Now that marriage is rapidly being redefined to include gay and lesbian couples, we thought we should explore if there is a specific subset of poems appropriate for same-sex ceremonies. With today's Supreme Court ruling striking down the Defense of Marriage Act, there will no doubt be many more such ceremonies in the coming months and years. I'm joined by Andrea Lawler, a poet and novelist currently living in Western Massachusetts. For our website, poetryfoundation.org, Andrea recently put together a short list of possible poems for a lesbian or gay wedding or commitment ceremony. She joins me from New England Public Radio in Amherst. Andrea, gay and lesbian weddings are new, and relatively, and the conventions of weddings are inevitably from heterosexual ceremonies. So for gay and lesbian couples getting hitched, do you think that they should do some things a little differently, like choose a poem that a heterosexual couple wouldn't necessarily choose? Do you think it should be slightly queered?
Well, I think people should determine for themselves what feels right. And if they want to have a really traditional ceremony and wedding and use a very traditional poem, that's great. I think that there are probably many queer people or lesbian or gay people who would prefer to have a more queer poem in their ceremony.
Yeah, you chose part 15, the last section of Song of the Open Road. And why do you think this is appropriate for a gay commitment ceremony or a wedding?
For me, this is a sort of perfect poem for a queer ceremony because I think that Whitman had same-sex lovers and attractions and is so open and ecstatic in his poetry. And in this particular poem, and especially in the last section of the poem, he's really saying, our love is the most important thing.
Now, would you read that section of Song of the Open Road for us? Section
Absolutely.
15 from the poem.
Okay. Allons, the road is before us. It is safe. I have tried it. My own feet have tried it well. Be not detained. Let the paper remain on the desk unwritten and the book on the shelf unopened. Let the tools remain in the workshop. Let the money remain unearned. Let the school stand. Mind not the cry of the teacher. Let the preacher preach in his pulpit. Let the lawyer plead in the court, and the judge expound the law. Camarado, I give you my hand. I give you my love more precious than money. I give you myself before preaching or law. Will you give me yourself? Will you come travel with me? Shall we stick by each other as long as we live?
So that was part 15 of Whitman's Song of the Open Road. And I have to say that the best and the worst of Whitman seems to be here right in this short section, that when he begins this every section virtually with allons, the French word allons, and that seems a little hokey now, and so does camarado. The language seems a little off to me, but his simple colloquial phrasing is just so moving, especially at the end. Will you give me yourself? Will you come travel with me? Shall we stick by each other as long as we live? I have to say, I love how that's a question, and it's a persuasive question rather than a solemn pledge. It strikes me as really appropriate.
Absolutely.
For marriage. But what in particular about this poem makes it seem appropriate to you for a, I guess, a gay marriage, more since he says camarado?
Well, you know, I mean, I think we can not get so hung up on gender.
Yeah.
For me, this is really a beautiful poem for any kind of a marriage in which the people getting married or committing their lives to each other feel strongly that marriage isn't the end. Whitman's idea of relationship is so expansive and so, to me, the beginning, the way people call a graduation a commencement to sort of signify this is the beginning of something, right? It's not necessarily the end of something. To me, it's like, okay, well, this is a way to queer marriage to say we are going on a road trip together. We don't know what we're going to encounter. We're on a journey. Shall we stick by each other as long as we live? And yes, it's a question. And that sort of openness, I think, is really freeing.
Yeah.
And that feeling of freedom to keep choosing to be together, I think, is the spirit that I would want in that kind of a ceremony, that sort of,
yeah.
We're going to change. This is the beginning of our travels together.
And rhetorically, the poem is asking the beloved to put their relationship first and foremost before any professional or worldly occupations.
And I also do think that there's something about that I give you my love more precious than money. I give you myself before preaching or law. It just, it gets at all of it, right? Legal structures, the state, religion, capitalism. It's, our love is more important than any of that.
I would like to tell Walt Whitman that it all changes when you have children because then those professional obligations and the making of money become terribly important. Now, for a more traditional ceremony, you listed poems not only by Whitman, but also by Emily Dickinson, by Shakespeare and Hart Crane. And you also listed A Birthday by Christina Rossetti. And Rossetti is one of the very few Victorian poets, anybody, female Victorian poets, that anybody bothers to read anymore. Is there a same-sex dynamic in her work that I'm not aware of?
Well, I think that people have talked about Goblin Market as containing an eroticism between the two sisters. Is it a lesbian eroticism? Are they symbolic in some way? She's somebody who's really known for writing about female sexuality.
So I want to get you to read A Birthday by Christina Rossetti. But one note about this poem, it mentions ver, which I had to look up. It's a bluish gray and white fur of a squirrel.
I know. I had to look that up, too. I thought, oh, no, poor squirrel.
Ver, V-A-I-R. And it's a fur that was used in often in medieval heraldic ornamentation. Can you give A Birthday a read?
Absolutely. Here we go. My heart is like a singing bird whose nest is in a watered chute. My heart is like an apple tree whose boughs are bent with thick-set fruit. My heart is like a rainbow shell that paddles in a halcyon sea. My heart is gladder than all these because my love has come to me. Raise me a dais of silk and down. Hang it with ver and purple dyes. Carve it in doves and pomegranates and peacocks with 100 eyes. Work it in gold and silver grapes, in leaves and silver fleur-de-lis. Because the birthday of my life is come, my love is come to me.
That's A Birthday by Christina Rossetti. It's basically saying that her love has a life of its own, which deserves to be commemorated. I think that's the rhetorical point of it. Am I right?
Absolutely. I absolutely think so. I think, you know, one of the things I love about this poem is not only the sort of very, again, ecstatic, I'm certainly drawn to that. The imagery is very lush in the first stanza.
Yeah, it's all about from the natural world in the first stanza.
From the natural world, and also imagery related to fertility. You know, a nest in a watered chute, boughs are bent with thick-set fruit. These are images of fecundity and fertility. And I find that very moving in a queer context to sort of invoke the procreative in a way that doesn't have to be literal. Our love is creative. Our love is fecund and fertile. Whether or not that means that we're then going to, through some particular means, have a baby, that's not necessary. The love can give birth to a shared life or creative works. You know, the bird is singing, the apple tree is producing fruit.
And the second part is all about creating this fantastically beautiful dais with medieval-like carvings and hangings. There's no mention of nature. What's she doing in the second stanza?
Well, to me, the through line is this idea of creativity, sort of from the natural or procreative moment to the more artistic or crafted human moment. To say our love is something that we are going to create a monument to, create art around, right? We're going to make this beautiful thing together. I think that, you know, the secret truth of my selections is that they are probably for queer poets and artists, but anyone who has that kind of artistic spirit.
Now, on a completely different note, you have also listed a fairly explicit poem by Essex Hemphill, the gay African-American poet who died of AIDS in 1995. And I'm going to save you the awkwardness of reading it yourself because we have a recording of Essex Hemphill himself reading it. Is there anything that you would like to say about this poem before we hear it?
Well, one of the reasons I included this poem And I included it in a sort of separate section on non-traditional. I mean, it may not be the kind of poem that you want to have recited at your wedding in front of your grandparents. But one of the things that I find really moving about this poem is how political it is. But I would want to offer a little context. The poem is called American Wedding.
Mm-hmm.
In the early 90s, poets and writers and gay and lesbian and bisexual and transgender people, queers, were not particularly concerned on the whole with gay marriage. This was maybe the height of the AIDS crisis in the United States.
Yeah.
As you said, Essex Hemphill died in 1995 of complications related to AIDS. He was an activist and a powerful figure in the movement. And I think it is really important to read this as a poem written in the context of a generation of gay men dying.
Yeah, a generation of gay men really under siege by both the disease and by the larger culture.
And in a culture of violence, there was much physical violence to be feared, not only disease.
Yeah. Let's give it a listen, and listeners should be warned that some of you might find it offensive. Here's Essex Hemphill reading American Wedding.
In America, I place my ring on your cock where it belongs. No horsemen bearing terror, no soldiers of doom will swoop in and sweep us apart. They're too busy looting the land to watch us. They don't know we need each other critically. They expect us to call in sick, watch television all night, die by our own hands. They don't know we are becoming powerful. Every time we kiss, we confirm the new world coming. What the rose whispers before blooming, I vow to you. I give you my heart, a safe house. I give you promises other than milk, honey, liberty. I assume you will always be a free man with a dream. In America, place your ring on my cock where it belongs. Long may we live to free this dream.
I don't know about you, but I'd like to attend a wedding where that poem was read. That would liven things up a little bit, don't you think?
I think that would be a really fun wedding.
I mean,
and it could happen, right? I mean, maybe, I'm sure people have read that poem at a wedding.
Yeah, I love its blunt carnality, which...
Yeah.
Carnality it was often etherealized at weddings with high-blown rhetoric about love. And this is also rhetoric about love, but it's carnal and defiant, and it's very much in your face.
The ring becomes very functional.
Very functional, yes. Now, for all its anger, the language is actually, and the imagery is actually fairly conventional. I give you my heart, he says. And then he adds, a safe house. I give you my heart, a safe house. As if he's offering his lover refuge from a brutal society.
Over the last century of queer identity, queer culture, I think people have found solace and refuge and safety in relationships, whether they're monogamous committed relationships, polyamorous relationships, friend relationships with other gay people, mm-hmm. the community. There is that refuge and that love. To me, this harkens back to Whitman in that I give you promises other than milk, honey, liberty. I assume you will always be a free man with a dream. To me, that's that same moment of we're two free people.
And a safe house also evokes escape from slavery.
Absolutely.
So Essex Hemphill was a black man, and I think that dual identity of being both African-American and gay plays a lot into his work.
Every time we kiss, we confirm the new world coming.
It's remarkable to me how much that new world is already here, in certain states at least. Does it strike you as remarkable how different a poem Essex Hemphill probably would write today than in the early 90s?
It does. And having encountered this as a young queer person in the early 90s and having found it so meaningful, it was the time of Queer Nation kiss-ins. And it was a very different time. And to encounter this poem now when it seems almost normal.
Almost.
Almost normal. It seems like, right, the new world is in many places here. but certainly not for everyone. There's still so many queer people, trans youth, queer youth who are struggling, who experience violence, who are not in this new world. This poem may speak to those people more powerfully than some of the other more traditional poems.
Andrea, thanks so much.
Sure. Thank you for having me. And, you know, it was such a pleasure to mine the Poetry Foundation's amazing archive to find these poems. Mm. And I would also sort of say to listeners that there are many, many more great poems. There's a queer love poems sampler on the website, mm-hmm. and there's a wedding poems finder as well. So there's lots of great stuff in the Poetry Foundation archives.
Andrea Lawler is at work on a novel and a book of poems called Position Papers. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.